Hi, and welcome back to Astrology and You. We're so excited to dive into one of our favorite topics, all about relationship timing.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I feel like I say this every episode, but this is really my favorite thing about astrology. Because when I was single for so, like, throughout my entire 20s for 5 years. And I thought that I could always be doing something more to try to meet someone, always freaking out when things didn't go wrong. When I really wish I had known astrology, like, back when I was 22, 23, because that would have just shown, like, it was not my time to be in a relationship. And, like, that's what's so helpful about astrology. Like, you can be on the dating apps all you want, trying to force something to happen. And at the end of the day, if the astrology timing is not there, it's not going to happen.
Yes, I'm so glad that you shared that, because it is so true. And it really helps you be less anxious and, like, just really accept that, okay, right now my focus is actually here, like, on work or self-improvement or whatever it is.
Yeah, or just not getting so depressed when, like, a little fling does not work out. Like, I would get so depressed over every single person I dated. And looking back at my chart, there was really nothing to indicate that I was supposed to be in a relationship at that time.
Yeah. Like, it's hard when you're in that, though, because, of course, like, everyone wants to be with someone. But yeah, it definitely can help you be like, okay, no, I'm not missing out on my person. I think that's the thing that always...
Exactly. Like, yeah. And, like, it wasn't my fault it ended. Like, just releasing that, like, oh, it was my fault, I should have made it work. Like, that's what this really whole episode hopefully helps with.
Yes, I love that. Okay. Yeah, and, like, specifically, we're going to get into what are kind of the transits and timing of greater relationship growth or greater commitment in relationships. So, like engagement, but also looking at things like just going on a date and, like, becoming more official and, you know, things like that too.
Yeah. So today we're definitely going to be focusing on what's more happy events happening in a relationship.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Would love to talk about breakup transits, because those are there too. But for today, to keep it shorter, we're just focusing on, like, when really good things happen in a relationship, like Maxine said, engagement, meeting a really significant partner that's not just, like, a 2 month, someone you date for 2 months, like, someone that could be, like, your life partner, getting married, having a kid together, like, really happy events like that.
Yeah, and we did also want to just stress, too, like, before we dive into it and stuff, like, the transits that we're going to go over, it doesn't mean that, like, if you don't have these transits, things can't happen to you, because there actually are so many different things that Alice and I see, like, with clients, giving readings, that can indicate greater relationship commitment. But, yeah, we want to keep it succinct and not go on for, like, 5 hours.
Yeah. So pull up your transit chart if you're listening to this, so you can follow along.
And also, we will be putting out a transit course soon, coming out in December. So look for that. Just all about transits, like, more generally. So yeah, if you are eager to learn more about transits, definitely look for that coming out soon.
Yes, that'll be super fun. We've been working so hard on it recently, and we're excited for people that want to sign up in the coming weeks. Speaking of transits, though, let's get into what's been going on the past few days, what's coming up this week in astrology. I know we have a major eclipse.
Yes. Okay. So let's start off just, like, talking about the eclipse season, because we're kind of coming out of the eclipse on November 19th and then December 4th. So, yeah, Alice, how has eclipse season been for you?
Kind of unsettling. I mean, that Taurus lunar eclipse was in my 10th house. It just brought about a lot of work. Like, I just feel like I cannot stop working. I can't breathe for a second.
Yeah, so much stress.
I know. It's just, like, very stressful.
Yeah. And I think also, like, when you have eclipses, like that first one in your 10th house, it just makes you realize kind of where you want to be going, but it also magnifies, like, everything that you don't want to be doing.
Exactly. Yeah. It makes you really emotional. It's like, oh my God, I'm having this massive realization of everything that's not what I want to be doing in this part of my life. But maybe it takes till that solar eclipse in Taurus next spring to finally get a new start there. But this is like the initial, like bringing up that realization, like, oh, something's off, or I need to do something differently.
Yeah, definitely all about realizations. Yeah, and I, for that eclipse, obviously we've talked about it, but I got engaged leading up to the eclipse, so that was something definitely happy.
And it was on your Venus, which is one of the transit eclipses on a on your Venus. That is one of the ones we're talking about in this episode for romantic timing.
Yes, exactly. So like basically the eclipse on November 19th was right on my natal Venus in Taurus, and it just kind of was more of a lunar eclipse that was, I don't know, more of a full circle manifestation of that. So like Nick and I have been dating for a while, and then it's been a long time. But yeah, and then it was kind of like just one of those transits of greater commitment and growth. So we'll definitely get into other manifestations of that for engagement, but that was a happy thing. Aside from that, though, I felt like similar, like very unsettled, and I rarely get sick, knock on wood, but yeah, mm-hmm. I've been feeling that.
Those 12th, 6th house eclipses, yeah, those are known to bring up illness and mental health and physical health concerns, or just more of a focus on them. So that's so interesting.
Yeah. And I do feel like it's been a lot like leading up to the Sagittarius solar eclipse. It's like so much about manifestations physically in the body, of like so much that we need to shed. So if you're feeling that too, listening, just kind of using this time to like really clear out the old.
It is so crazy. Like that, I can like feel this solar eclipse on December 4th coming. And I don't know, it's in my 5th house, and I just do feel like a lot more confident in myself. And I'm like, oh, wow, I really need to stop comparing myself to other people.
Yes, that is such a lesson for Leo risings right now with that eclipse.
Yeah.
That's awesome. For me, it's going to be in the 7th house. So again, like that's another one we'll talk about for relationship timing.
I know, like you have all the relationship timing ones right
now. It was bound to happen, which is another way of like, if you're in a relationship now and like you're like, oh, when will we get engaged? When will this happen? Like, yeah, it just, again, helps so much to know astrology, so you're not like putting pressure on yourself or your partner to like force things before they're meant to happen.
Yeah, like I can't stand these deadlines people put on themselves. Like I have to be married by 30, or society tells me I have to be engaged by my late 20s. It's like sometimes people don't get that relationship transit till they're 35 or 40 or 50 or older. It's like you can't force that stuff to happen. It's all about timing.
Yes. Okay, well, that's a perfect segue. Do you want to just jump into it? I feel like we're both so excited to talk about it.
Okay, yes. So I've done a lot of research on this, and the main things, I just want to run through the main transits that we see when we're looking at relationship timing and charts. And like the number one thing I see when someone gets into a relationship, gets engaged, or gets married is eclipses in the 5th house or eclipses in the 7th house going on. So like coming up with this eclipse cycle going into 2022, like that would be Taurus or Scorpio risings, or Capricorn and Cancer risings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like eclipses, as we mentioned in our previous episode, they're huge turning points or like just opportunities for greater growth. So having those eclipses in relationship houses like the 5th and 7th are just so powerful for kind of being that catalyst of like, oh, actually, I want to deepen this relationship.
Yeah. And like just to note, when they're in the 5th and 7th houses, the eclipses, they will also be in the 11th and the 1st house at the same time. So it's just important. It's like the 1st and 7th house eclipses and then the 5th and the 11th house. Like those are always for some reason really significant with timing relationship stuff.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then I do want to preface by saying also, if you're listening and you want to learn more, I know we'll like probably get to this, but Alice is like, so when you were saying, I've kind of researched this a little bit, like Alice is obsessed with this. So yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna come out with a course on like how to find this stuff in your chart if you're listening to this and it's kind of going over your head. So kind of look for that in early 2022. I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm so excited for you too. But yeah, so anyway, so eclipses to the 1st and 7th, the 5th and the 11th. And then also like eclipses are just a type of transit, but do we want to talk about the other ones?
Yeah. I just wanted to mention like that with just like our personal examples with the 5th and the 7th house eclipses, like I got into a relationship after a solar eclipse in my 5th house and you got into a relationship. Or no, sorry. You got engaged right before a solar eclipse in your 7th house. Mm-hmm. So it is like crazy accurate.
Yeah, it's super accurate. And even like, you know, everyone always thinks of like another example of deepening your relationship is definitely when you move in together. And like when that happened for Nick and me, that was like only 6 months after we began dating. Like we pretty much were moved in, but like when we actually were, those were eclipses in his 1st house and 7th house.
Yeah, I was going to say when they were in Aries and Libra, and they shifted into that in like 2014, 2015. And that's like right when you guys were starting your relationship and getting really serious.
Yeah. So it's like eclipses there are so powerful for just like taking it to the next level, basically, in a relationship.
That makes me think of something. Like every time I run into like a Libra rising that is getting engaged or getting married recently, I'm like, let me guess, you guys started dating in the spring of 2015.
Yeah.
And they're always like, yes. Yeah. Libra rising or Aries rising. Yeah. Those people, like they all had the major relationship transits in 2014, 2015.
Yeah, like right around then. And so yeah, those eclipses are really strong. And also I wanted to touch on eclipses that light up your natal Venus specifically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, eclipses on Venus.
Like we kind of mentioned that with my example just recently, like that happened for me, an eclipse on my Venus. And then that was when I got engaged.
Yeah, so like I was seeing a lot of people with like a Sagittarius or a Gemini Venus. I mean, my boyfriend has a Gemini Venus and he started dating me this year. So that's like a perfect example. We're going to get into examples that aren't just me and Maxine after this. But yeah, I just do feel like eclipses to the Venus and sometimes the moon too. Those two planets, when they're triggered with eclipse cycles, there's always something like really significant happening with a relationship.
Yeah, too. And especially too, like, not just looking at conjunctions, but a lot of times with the moon, I'll see that in like, I don't know, sometimes it can show up in different aspects.
Like if the eclipses were square to the moon?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So like Pisces and Virgo then would count too. And I'm a Pisces moon. Yeah, that is true. And a Pisces Venus.
But those are specific to like the placements of the moon and Venus, not just like any eclipse.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. Another one I see a lot is like Jupiter transits, Jupiter moving through the 7th house, also Jupiter moving through the 1st house, and what else? Jupiter in the same sign as the moon or Venus. I would say same sign, yeah. Sometimes opposite, but like for the most part, when it's really significant, it's usually in the same sign as those planets.
Yes, that is honestly, we'll get into examples again, but Jupiter is basically such an expander. And so when it touches those planets or lights up those houses that have to do with relationships, it literally means relationship growth and expansion.
And like happiness.
Yeah.
And usually I notice kind of with the Jupiter transit, it even may start a few months before it gets into the sign of the moon or Venus, mm-hmm. Or the 1st or 7th house. Like, let's say Jupiter's still in the 6th house in the transit chart. Usually the relationship might even start a little before it gets to the 7th. And so then it like spends the whole time in the 7th, like really happy or having a lot of relationship growth.
Right.
And then also if we're looking at the 1st and 7th transits to those, it becomes really important when Jupiter touches the ascendant line or the descendant line, like exactly like my first date with my now boyfriend was when Jupiter was exactly on my descendant line.
That is one of my favorite examples still of like how accurate that timing was.
That's crazy.
But yeah, if you're listening, just like when we're talking about the first and seventh houses, there's 30 degrees in both of those houses, but there's one specific degree in that 30 degrees, if you're still following along with what I'm saying, that is super sensitive. And that's the ascendant and descendant. And so, yeah, just noting that in your birth chart, they're labeled as AC or DC.
Mm-hmm. Jupiter in the fifth is one other one I see when they're, it's not as strong, I've noticed, but I do see it in some people's chart when they meet someone significant. There just tends to be like a lot more romantic dating activity for that year-long period when Jupiter's in the fifth.
Yeah, I would also add, just to like tease it out, the fifth and seventh houses are really great for relationships. The fifth house is much more like initiating energy in a way, like it's very fun and playful and romantic. Whereas the seventh, I find that transits there just bring about like, wow, I really want commitment with this person. I want marriage. Like it's much more intense.
Yeah, like maybe it's more intense from the start. Whereas like if you meet someone with a Jupiter through the fifth house transit, maybe it's just like, okay, we're dating, we're really enjoying each other's company. And then 2 years later, it finally gets to the seventh house. And right. Then that's when the two people are like, oh my God, like this, we need to be more serious about each other.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. And like, you're an example of having eclipses in the fifth, but then also at the same time, you had Jupiter in the seventh.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, when we're talking about these transits, it usually isn't just one transit going on to trigger a big relationship thing. Like there's usually multiple of these happening at the same time in someone's chart.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like, we get more into this. Actually, we're working on our transit course right now. So if you are interested too, in just like more generally learning about transits, definitely like sign up for that or look out for it early December.
Yeah, because this is kind of, can be difficult to follow if you aren't familiar with transits.
Yeah, I'm realizing I'm like, I want to point to things on like our screen. But yeah, basically just knowing that if you have just Jupiter in the seventh, it may take other transits to kind of add up and add at like bring extra weight to that transit to kind of activate it more for you.
Yeah, and also like Jupiter will spend a year-long period in the first, seventh, or fifth houses. Like every house it spends 12 months in. And it's like, okay, when is that relationship going to happen within those 12 months? That's when it brings in other transits into the picture. It's like, okay, when does Mars trigger Jupiter? When does the Sun trigger Jupiter there? It's whittle it down to like a more exact date of when the event could occur.
Yeah, exactly. Like Saturn in the seventh, like, okay, you have 2.5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So that brings us to our other major one. We see is Saturn transiting the seventh. That can also be a breakup transit, but we're not going to focus on that now here. But Saturn transiting through the seventh often just brings like a more serious tone to relationships, needing commitment, needing to know where it's going. And really like it's a 2.5 year period of like, I need to focus my attention and like really learn these lessons about being a good partner to someone.
Yeah, you just put it perfectly. It's just Saturn always takes things really seriously. So it's like wanting to kind of step up to the plate, like take on more responsibility for one another and like really be a partner that's there for that person. I don't know. Like that's just the vibe of Saturn there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Similar to Saturn transits to the natal Venus. So Saturn's in a square, opposition, or conjunction to the person's Venus. That'll be like a year-long period, I feel like, as it moves back and forth. That often is like, okay, I need something more serious in this relationship. Like, let's step it up.
Yeah, exactly. So those are kind of the main ones. And just kind of noting that there, again, there are other eclipses. So not to be like bummed if you don't have these ones. But honestly, these are the ones that Alice and I see all the time when people are like taking bigger steps in their relationship, and especially ones that are a little more obvious. Like you look back and you're like, oh, that was when we moved in together. That was when we had a kid. That was when, you know, mm-hmm, big things.
Also Saturn in the first house. That's one we forgot to mention, but Saturn in the first and the seventh, it spends 2.5 years in every single house. So those are longer transits. Like you were saying, Maxine, these are the ones, these might not be all the relationship transits, but I would say like for the majority of charts I look at, there is at least one of these going on when a major relationship event happens.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely taking this into consideration, looking at your chart to kind of see when relationship activity might kind of come up more, have more growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so let's get into some examples. We have a few. We have like one example where the person, it all happened really quickly for them, like 2-year turnaround, meeting the person and getting married. Then we have someone else where they've been dating for over 3 decades and they're still not married, but these transits have marked major relationship milestones. So we just wanted to show that like it doesn't always have to result in marriage if that's not what you want. And then also comparing the charts of like a couple to show how it appears in two people's charts at the same time, even if they don't have the same birth chart.
Yeah, exactly. Because also something to consider is like maybe you'll see that you have one of these transits, like maybe you have Jupiter and Saturn in your seventh house, but your partner doesn't have a lot of relationship activity. It's like it kind of has to be a game where you're looking at not only you, but knowing there's always two people in any partnership. So you have to look at both transits.
Yes. Okay. So the first person we want to talk about is Paris Hilton, because she got recently married.
Yes.
And yeah, hers is a fascinating chart. I mean, it's definitely all there why she, okay. So she had known her partner for about 15 years before they actually started dating. And that just goes to show like sometimes you can know the person before, but it like takes for these transits to come along for it to actually like the relationship to go into effect and be like, oh, like I didn't see this in you before. Let's start dating. I'm attracted to you now.
Yes, exactly. Like she's such a good example of why relationship timing is so important. Cause like seriously, you might just see someone a different way when you have a certain transit.
Mm-hmm. Or like someone could be friends for a while and like you secretly like each other and then the transit comes along and you both have this urge to tell each other you like each other and then it becomes a relationship. I had a client like that once. It was like such a crazy love story.
It's so cute. I love when that happens.
Okay, so Paris Hilton began dating her now husband in 2019. She's, just for reference, she's a Sagittarius rising. Yeah. So Gemini's her seventh house. And she also has Venus in Aquarius, which is important, and the moon in Leo. Just naming those because those are really important to look at when we're timing relationship stuff.
Yeah, so she's just, she's a Aquarius sun, if you're trying to like picture it while we talk about it.
Okay, so they started dating in 2019 when Jupiter was in Sagittarius. So there we have a Jupiter transiting the first house in her ascendant line that whole year.
Yeah.
So definitely makes sense why she met someone and started dating during that year. Like it was a more happy personal life year for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like having Venus and Jupiter in the first house, it just shows that things are, honestly, whenever Venus is in the first house and Jupiter, it's like people just are magnetized toward you.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what month of 2019 they started dating because Venus November. And Jupiter connected. Oh, November 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's interesting. Because I was also going to say the eclipses finished up in Leo and Aquarius in 2019. So maybe the like lasting effects of those were still affecting her moon and Venus in Leo and Aquarius.
Yeah, especially to note too, like with that, it's just sometimes when there are eclipses to the moon and Venus, like they were, like you mentioned, it kind of, there'll be revelations or realizations of what you do want in relationships, and it doesn't necessarily get played out right that instance. It can come with like even just following that.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so that was like 2019 for her. And then we move on to early 2021. They got engaged in February, which is so interesting. I mean, Jupiter and Saturn were both in Aquarius by that time. I think Jupiter was probably really close to her Venus in Aquarius and exactly mm-hmm. opposite her moon in Leo. So both of those planets, Jupiter and Saturn, were affecting the Venus and Leo planets in her chart, which are the sun, Venus, and moon.
Yeah, like she literally had Jupiter, Venus, and Mercury all together transiting Venus in her birth chart approaching it. So that definitely contributed to the engagement piece, because I always find two engagements, Venus is always involved, but also like she's kind of like documented her wedding. Mm-hmm. And so it's like been this like really big thing apparently. And so it's interesting that Jupiter was involved in the engagement, which is all about just ceremonies and being seen and like making it a big extravagant thing to celebrate love.
That's really interesting. What I find so cool is like, so Jupiter was in Aquarius from late December until May of 2021. And she got engaged during that first round of it in Aquarius. Then it went into Pisces in the summer. So it moved away from the Aquarius and Leo planets in her chart. Then it came back in the fall. And I think she got married right after it stationed direct in Aquarius. So the mm-hmm. second round of Jupiter in Aquarius, she like finished what had been started in the first part of the year, like engagement, and then wrapped it up with marriage in the fall.
Yes, I love that. Yeah, it's like such a full circle moment. Whenever there are retrogrades, it's always like literally she was planning her engagement.
And we haven't even talked about how the eclipses were in Sagittarius, Gemini, yeah, all last year and this year, and that's her rising in her seventh house.
Exactly. And so like, again, if you listen to the previous episode we had about the eclipses, this last eclipse in Sagittarius on December 4th, I feel like she was already feeling that. Because it kind of wraps really up what she had been begun basically back in 2020. And yeah, that was around the time when they got together actually and like actually went official publicly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the nodes shifted into Sag Gemini in early 2020, even if the eclipses weren't until June of 2020. But mm-hmm. that was kind of like the start of their relationship, was the nodes shifting into Sag Gemini.
Yeah. And can I just add in two other random things?
Yeah.
So one, I just want to say, if you're listening and you're 40 or you're about to turn 40, 40 is an awesome year in astrology for love. Like Paris Hilton got married when she was 40, and it's a fifth house perfection year.
That's really interesting. Yeah, you're right. And also 28 is a fifth house perfection year. And like I got into a relationship in a fifth house perfection year.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like whenever someone comes to me, like a client will come and they'll be like, oh, I'm turning 40. Like it feels significant. But like there's such a stigma on 40. But it's so funny because I'm like, 40 is a great year. And 30 is too, because 30 is a seventh house perfection year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always don't worry. It'll be good.
It's those years in between which aren't really great.
Like, yeah.
20, that's actually like, it's an okay perfection year. But yeah, that's interesting that like there's a stigma around these ages, and then astrology, it's like, no, it's actually a good year for you.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, just to add that in, and yeah, we'll keep it to that because I was going to mention something about Juno, but I'm like, we'll keep it to what we have here.
Yeah, Juno might be a little too complicated for now. Okay, so next we wanted to talk about Oprah, because very similar chart to Paris Hilton, which is funny.
Yeah.
In that they both have a lot of Aquarius planets and they both have a Sagittarius rising. The difference, though, with Oprah is that she's been with her partner since 1986 and they've never gotten married. They did get engaged once. So I want to look at that timing of like when they started dating, when they got engaged, when they decided to not get engaged, when they moved in together. Even though it didn't result in marriage, like she still had these same transits that like Paris Hilton would have, but mm-hmm. it hasn't ended up like that.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, just for reference, Oprah's chart, basically, like Ala said, she is a Sagittarius rising. She also has her moon in Sagittarius. Mm-hmm. And then has her sun and Venus also in Aquarius. And mm-hmm. yeah, Jupiter is in the seventh house, which we'll kind of get to why that is important as well.
Yeah, Jupiter in Gemini, seventh house. Okay, so she started dating her partner Stedman in 1986. And that was right when Saturn had gone into Sagittarius. I believe Saturn was right on her moon in Sag. So there's that Saturn-moon connection, yeah. Which can sometimes be tough. But I just feel like there's like it indicates really important emotional lessons learned from intimate relationships. So often Saturn moon connections, there's a relationship going on to point to why maybe there's more emotional stuff happening for you at that time.
Yeah, exactly. Like when Nick and I even got together, we had something similar, like Saturn in the house of my moon.
Mm-hmm. And then also, yeah, so the Saturn in the first and Saturn to her moon were two big ones we always see. And then eclipses were in her fifth house that mm-hmm. year. They were in Aries and Libra. So new romance.
New romance for Oprah. Yes. But no, yeah, it's like so telling of, again, going back to fifth house themes of kind of starting up something romantic, having that like more dating kind of connection. And yeah, and then also having, at the same time she was having that kind of more playful fifth house energy with the eclipses there, it was like, okay, but also Saturn on her moon maybe being like, oh, I really want intimacy that's lasting.
Mm-hmm. And I think what's interesting is 1986 was like, I think the year, like her talk show, the Oprah Winfrey show,
yeah,
launched. Like that was the first year of it.
Oh, it's so cool.
So it's interesting to see how, like, not only can these transits result in love, but I just feel like big things with astrology all come at once. Like sometimes I'll see people get a huge career promotion and get engaged in the same year, or like have a kid, but their career is also blowing up at the same time. Like I just feel like a lot of major events tend to come at once with astrology.
Yeah. And especially when there are transits that are bigger to the first house, like having Saturn enter your first house, that's like stressful because there's so much change. Like it's coming at you from all directions.
Mm-hmm. So true. Okay, so then we fast forward to October 1992, and they briefly get engaged. So by then, the eclipses had shifted to Sagittarius and Gemini, her first and seventh houses. So once again, eclipses in the first and seventh house. That's, like, so common. I can't, like, repeat that enough.
Yeah. Like, honestly, it sounds like we're repeating ourselves, but it's so true. Like, yeah, exactly. Eclipses are huge in the first and seventh for wanting to kind of like take things more seriously. And also by then, Saturn, transiting Saturn, had moved mm-hmm. from her first house. And it was in her third house, like transiting her natal Sun and Venus conjunction.
Yeah, I was going to mention that too, because that's that Saturn-Venus of wanting to step up commitment. So having that relationship change, that was about having more commitment.
Exactly. And it was actually interesting too, because Saturn kind of does point to, like with these transits, when Saturn goes over your Venus, for example, like it did for Oprah here, it's where you kind of have some pressure on you too, sometimes from society. So I would say, like, even though they got engaged briefly, it was interesting to like research about it, because she had said that like how they got engaged, it was like, oh, well, it's about time to get engaged. And she kind of has reflected and like shared more about how it was like, oh, like that seemed like the right step. Like that's what you do after you're together that long, but it wasn't actually what they wanted. Like, and she said now looking back on it, they wouldn't even be together now if they had gotten married.
And it's so interesting. Yeah. Cause Saturn transits often make you realize time and age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what's so crazy is like, okay, so the next year, 1993, they decide to call off the engagement. They're still together though. But that just shows like how there's the eclipses stay in a pair of houses and signs for about a 2-year period. So there can be like multiple relationship changes if they're going on in the first and seventh house. So maybe the first eclipse you get engaged, the last one you're getting married. In her case, it was like the first ones in Sagittarius and Gemini in 92, they were getting engaged. But then by the final ones in 93, as we shift into 94, they were deciding again not to get married.
Yeah, exactly. But then it's also beautiful because it points to like not everything that other people, that's right for someone else, is going to be right for you. And so it's kind of like the other piece of astrology being like, okay, transit timing, like knowing your personal timing can be so helpful, but also recognizing that everyone else has different needs based on their birth chart too. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's kind of cool to see how it fits together there.
And then one final date I had for her was 1995. They move in together. Oprah moves in with her partner. So that would have been a happy time in the relationship. And by that point, Jupiter had moved to Sagittarius, and it was in her first house and on her Sagittarius moon. So once again, Jupiter signifying a happier time in relationships.
Yeah, exactly. And also a side note, Saturn moved into her fourth, which is literally like home, moving it together.
So crazy. Okay, on to our final example, which is Chrissy Teigen and John Legend. They're such a cute couple, and they really show how transits can be happening. I mean, obviously the same transits are happening to everyone in the world at any given moment, but it's like their two charts are definitely different, but in both of them, they're resulting in relationship things happening, relationship growth and happiness. So this is like why I always say when people come to me asking if they're compatible with someone, it's really not about being compatible. It's like, do you guys have relationship timing that matches up at the same time? That's what you need to be looking at.
That's so interesting. And I mean, you can see that in, to some degree in the chart based on like the transits and the timing. Like, I mean, but it ultimately looking at compatibility is kind of taking into consideration how transits will affect them at any given time.
Yeah, exactly. Like if someone you're really interested in just like doesn't have a relationship in their chart, I don't know, it's not worth like obsessing over if you're compatible or not. Because yeah, it's like they're not getting into a relationship anytime soon. And like maybe you have that relationship transit. So it's like open yourself up to maybe someone else to come in.
Oh, I love that, Alice. That's such a good point. Yeah, timing so is everything. And actually just like looking at, I have Chrissy Teigen's and John's like charts pulled up, and they have such good compatibility though, like from a karmic perspective too.
What I noticed was someone has the moon. I could have sworn he had a Taurus moon. Am I wrong?
He has, okay, so maybe we should share with people listening too. So yeah, so John Legend has a Capricorn rising, Capricorn sun, and then he has the moon in the 12th house in Sagittarius, and Venus is in Scorpio in the 11th house.
Okay, I don't know why I was like thinking Taurus for him, but yeah, that is what I had originally.
Well, I guess like he is very earthy. I guess that comes out in the form of Capricorn.
Yeah, so true. Oh, this is what I was thinking. Okay, so Chrissy Teigen has a Scorpio rising, moon in Cancer.
Yeah.
And then sun in Sagittarius. And she also has Venus in Scorpio right by her rising. Mm-hmm. That was what I was thinking, this seventh house moon connection. He has a Capricorn rising and her Cancer moon falls in his seventh house opposite a sun.
Yeah,
that's
so
crazy.
This is what we were talking about earlier when we were talking about the first and seventh houses contain the ascendant and descendant degree. Mm-hmm. And so like the descendant degree is like that specific degree in the seventh house that's so strong for relationships. And John Legend has his at 12 and her moon is like less than a degree 11. Away.
Oh my God, that's crazy. I love it.
Yeah, like, oh my gosh, their karmic ties are so interesting.
Yeah. And then he also has Venus in Scorpio. So they have the same Venus sign, which means transits to Scorpio and Taurus are going to be really powerful to both of them because they both have that Venus in Scorpio and she's a Scorpio rising.
Exactly. So super, super cool synastry. But this kind of speaks to like why the synastry that they share and compatibility like speaks to their transit. So for example, they began dating in September of 2006. And Chrissy was having eclipses in her fifth house and just a ton of relationship activity, like wanting to be in a relationship. And John had Jupiter in the sign of his Venus.
Yeah, they both had that. Jupiter was in Scorpio that fall.
Oh, yeah, for both of them.
Yeah, before it went to Sagittarius. So, like, it's like for both of them, they had Jupiter on their Venus and Scorpio. And I think for both, it's, yeah, they both have late degrees of Venus and Scorpio. So it would have hit them at the same exact time. And that's her first house, her Venus, and also his Venus. And then the following year, 2007, probably when the relationship got a lot more serious, or they finally wanted to be more committed, Jupiter moved to Sagittarius, which is his moon and her sun. So it was setting them both up for like, okay, like we're about to have, like, not only was it like that year, but the following year that they had good relationship energy.
Yeah. And usually when someone, like, what kind of helps them transition from that dating into like more committed relationship, it's not like you're going to have relationship transits for like decades, but usually when that coincides with the other person for those first like formative years of a relationship, that can be just so successful for like just a really strong foundation.
Yeah. It's kind of like there has to be something to keep the momentum going.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then by the time they got engaged in 2011, I think it was the end of 2011. I have December. Let me know if you have a different date.
Yeah, December 2011.
Jupiter was in Taurus. So it had come like halfway, 6 years later, or about 6 years later. Five. Okay, that's weird. But yeah, Jupiter was in Taurus. So again, it was opposite both of their Venuses in Scorpio. A Jupiter connection to Venus. And Taurus is her seventh house as a Scorpio rising. So she had Jupiter in her seventh house. And then when they got married 2 years later in 2013, Jupiter moved to Cancer and was in his seventh house.
It's just so beautiful because, like, even when they got engaged, Jupiter was in his fifth house. And then, like you said, it progressed into his seventh. So, again, like, that progression from fifth house transits into the seventh can really signify more rapid relationship growth.
Yeah, and, like, when it was in his seventh in Cancer, when they got married, it was also on her moon in Cancer. So it's, like, you kind of have to have these, like, matchups with the person you're seeing for it to, like, both affect you at the same time. Yeah, like, there just have to be certain planets that line up in people's, in a couple's chart.
Right. That signifies when one person is ready to kind of step it up in a relationship, likely the other partner will be feeling similarly. So yeah, it just creates a lot more, I don't know, just a relationship where you feel like your needs emotionally and like what you want out of the relationship, what you're ready for, flows rather than forcing things or being out of alignment with each other.
One last thing I wanted to say on Chrissy and John is that when they got married, the eclipses were in Scorpio and Taurus. So again, a transit to both of their Venus and Scorpios, and her first and seventh house, and his fifth and 11th house, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah, it's like they met under a Venus and Scorpio transit, Jupiter, and then they got married under a Venus and Scorpio transit, which was the eclipses.
Yeah, I just honestly, it's just such a good example. And luckily they're a couple that shares a lot more about their lives and their relationships. So like there's so much that we could share about them as a couple, but but yeah, I feel like that illustrates the point for sure for you guys listening, how important it is to kind of look at the transits of relationship growth in your partner and yourself.
Yeah. And if this all was confusing, again, I'm going to come out with a course on it to walk you through that with visuals, but definitely, I don't know, try to play around and like go back to, even if you aren't dating someone right now, maybe there was a significant relationship in your past and you want to go back and see, did I have any of this going on in my chart when we started dating?
Yes, there's so much that we could get into. But yeah, I think that this really kind of helps. Our idea was just to give you guys some of the more foundational transits that we commonly see. And yeah, just start playing with it, like Alice said, and noticing some patterns for yourself. It can be so, so helpful.
Yeah. Okay, so with that being said, let's get to our Q&A for the week. We have two questions. The first one is, kind of relates to what we just talked about today. She says, in event astrology, what are some things to look at when it comes to timing romantic events? So like timing a first date, a wedding date, maybe an engagement, like anything like that. What we talked about in this episode is more general, like when will it happen to you? But then you can get into more specifics of how do I choose the right date to get married? How do I choose the right date to go on a first date? And that is more about the like exact time and day.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, with this question, like we could do a whole nother episode on that.
I know. Yeah.
But maybe like Alice, what is like a quick tip that you would say for maybe first date? We'll just keep it to that because I feel like we haven't really touched on that.
Yeah, I would say like something like a wedding. Okay, so yeah, okay. We talked about like the wedding engagement stuff with eclipses. Like big stuff like that tends to be around eclipses. With a first date, I would always go on a first date on a waxing moon. That's just a rule of mine. So right after a new moon, but in the 2 weeks leading up to a full moon. I just like really, there may be exceptions to this. There's exceptions to everything, but waning relationships during waning moons, I don't know. They just don't work out as frequently as a waxing moon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it definitely, like Alice said, don't worry if you look back and you're like, oh no, my partner and I started dating on a waning moon. But definitely I would just add to that by saying, I totally agree. Also, if you, like, sometimes I see it where the person goes on the date during a waning moon, but like they've already been talking for like weeks or something, and that was started on a waxing moon. So like thinking of when is the most significant start date, quote unquote, whatever that means to you, and making sure that it falls within the new moon and full moon.
Yeah, like I received the first text message from my boyfriend on a waning moon and I was freaking out. I was like, oh my God, no. Thankfully, he was out of town for a weekend, so our first date did not happen until the new moon in Aquarius, and I timed it to be like that. But like, again, like I feel like if we had had our date like one day earlier, it would probably still have the same outcome. Like, we'd be in a relationship. So maybe my rule is silly, but that's just like how I feel.
No, it's a good tip. But play with it for you and definitely let us know. I'd be curious to know if anyone has any examples of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then the second question is, does astrology look for you to give people second chances should they re-enter your life? So basically the question is asking, like, does astrology show, I guess, when you might be open to giving a second chance to someone?
I would say, and I think you'll agree with me, retrogrades, like this could be Mercury retrograde, this could be Mars retrograde or Venus retrograde. I'd say those three, especially when they're happening like in the seventh house or maybe like in the sign of your Venus, like I feel like an ex always reaches out or usually reaches out and wants you to take them back, or you start thinking about your past relationship a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we wanted to include this one because Venus retrograde is coming up. And so usually even leading up to Venus retrograde, you'll start to kind of notice that it's a time of closure in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, I don't know. I'm always someone that's like, don't revisit a past relationship during a retrograde, because chances are when it's no longer retrograde, you'll be back at the same place where you started. And you'll realize why you broke up with them in the first place.
Yeah, and I guess that's a really good point to touch on. And also this one, like giving second chances, though, like during a retrograde, that might be more of a time where you're kind of leaving things in the past. But it sometimes can be where you're like revisiting something to start fresh after the retrograde in some sense. So I guess that's kind of why we said that might be a time where people re-enter your life, but it's up to you what you feel into that. Like, is there change that has happened there? Is there growth? And giving yourself time after the retrograde to decide that still, because things tend to be unclear until a while after.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's always up to you in the end. Astrology is not like forcing you to get back with an ex, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That is a very good point to end on.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's all we have for you guys today. I hope that if you stuck with us through all the examples, that you enjoyed it.
Yes. I'm glad we got to talk about this, because I always get questions about relationship timing. And it, as you've seen, it is a lot more complicated than maybe you might have thought before.
Yeah. But so much more complicated. But hopefully this gives you guys a good base understanding to like go and learn more as well.
Yes. Okay, bye guys.
Thank you so much for listening.